Welcome back to HR After Dark, where I break down the latest in employment law, HR risks, and workplace trends with a little edge, because let's be honest, that's what makes it interesting. I'm your host, Shelby. Today, we're getting down, okay? We're getting a little confusing, and we're talking about one of the biggest shakeups in federal employment in recent history, Trump administration's mass terminations of federal employees and Schedule F, and how they coincide. Now, I will say, disclaimer, I am nobody without my notes, okay? I've got notes. This is, if you could see, you would see the notes. And I have to have notes because I have to make sure that I'm saying the right thing. And while I can go off the cuff sometimes, I need you guys to know that if for any reason I say something wrong, please check me, but I try not to go off the cuff too much, especially when talking about something like this, because there are a lot of twists and turns, and unfortunately, it is just a legal mess. So today we're diving into a high-stakes legal and political issue that's making waves in federal employment, mass terminations of federal probationary employees. And we're asking some big questions. Can the federal government legally fire hundreds of employees or thousands of employees at once? And moreover, can a federal judge overrule the Office of Personnel Management with these firings or layoffs? What civil service protections exist for probationary employees if terminations are politically motivated? Do employees have a legal right to fight back? And when does a mass firing turn into a class action lawsuit? Before we get into all of that, though, I have to give a backstory not only on Schedule F, why it was appealed and why it's back under Trump's new executive order, but I also have to give a backstory on the Office of Personnel Management, or OPM, just so you guys can understand what they are, how the pieces of the puzzle kind of move together and cause for all of this to be such a big dramatic ordeal. Okay, let's talk Office of Personnel Management. You're going to see me looking this way. I'm looking at another screen to read this right off to you guys. You can absolutely look up this information. Google is free. I always claim. Please Google, please do your research. Check me if you think that anything I'm saying is out of the ordinary. But I do have a degree right over there. And I'm not saying that having a degree makes you super qualified, but it's what I do for a living that I'm speaking on. Office of Personnel Management. The Office of Personnel Management is a part of the executive branch of the U.S. government. It serves as the human resources agency. It's me, federal government. Okay, so it operates under the authority of the president. However, it is an independent agency. It is not part of a specific department like the Department of Labor or the Department of Defense. It is just its own independent agency that directly reports to the president. The director of OPM is appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. The president can influence OPM policies and priorities. Policy management within the OPM means that OPM administers federal workforce policies, including hiring, benefits, labor relations, etc., etc. It enforces civil service laws and manages programs like federal retirement and health insurance. OPM issues regulations and guidance on federal personnel matters, but its decisions can be challenged in court or overridden by Congress through legislation. So while it's part of the executive branch, its actions are subject to oversight by the judicial branch, the courts, okay? And also the legislative branch, Congress. Now that that's out of the way. Background on Schedule F. Let's start with some context on this. Back in October 2020, during his first term, President Trump signed an executive order creating Schedule F, and it was pretty much a big deal for numerous reasons. Schedule F was set to reclassify certain policymaking and policy influencing positions within the federal government. Employees in Schedule F positions were no longer covered by traditional civil service protections under the Pendleton Act and the Civil Service Reform Act. This meant that they could be hired and fired at will, essentially giving the administration more control over policymaking roles. The stated reason was to give the executive branch more flexibility in managing the federal workforce and remove obstructionist employees who were allegedly resisting the administration's policy goals. However, critics had argued that it was a backdoor way to make the federal workforce more politically loyal, essentially turning career civil servants into political appointees. Now, we know that Trump left office before Schedule F could be fully implemented, and on January 20th, 2021, his first day in office, President Biden repealed the executive order restoring civil service protections to these positions. Fast forward to Trump's first day back in office, January of 2025, Schedule F is back. Trump signed the new executive order titled Restoring Accountability to Policy Influencing Positions Within the Federal Workforce. Agencies were ordered to begin reclassifying employees under Schedule F. The order removed civil service protections for potentially tens of thousands of federal employees, making them easier to fire for political reasons. And that is where all the real trouble started. So when you hear so many federal employees were fired, that is because we have now enacted Schedule F. Let's keep continuing because I promise it gets a little bit muddier. Almost immediately after reinstating Schedule F, the Trump administration began conducting mass terminations across multiple agencies. However, these terminations were not done under Schedule F. Instead, they used a process called reduction in force, and that is a key distinction. So while he implemented his executive order putting back Schedule F, he did not go ahead and do the firings or layoffs under Schedule F. It was done under reduction in force. Reduction in force is a formal process under the Office of Personnel Management. Employees are let go based on tenure, seniority, performance, and veteran status. We know that mass emails were sent out to agency heads, and they were told, look for those with lowest seniority, the probationary employees, and let them go. Reduction in force is legal under federal law when agencies face budget cuts, restructuring, or efficiency changes. And I know you're already thinking, ding, 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 doge, and you're correct. Employees affected by a reduction in force retain certain appeal rights through the Merit Systems Protection Board, or the MSPB. So if you hear me say MSPB, it's the Merit Systems Protection Board from here on out. It's so long to say. So now under Schedule F, that allows for political-based terminations. Employees in Schedule F can be fired at will without the right to appeal through the MSPB. RIF, yes, MS. Schedule F, no. Under Schedule F, there are no requirement to justify terminations based on merit or seniority. So you might be asking, why did they use RIF instead of Schedule F? Because RIF gives the administration the ability to target specific agencies and job classifications under the guise of budgetary efficiency while avoiding direct political retaliation claims. So if you're fired under Schedule F, the employee can turn around and say, it's because I'm Democrat. And then you have a whole new legal case in front of you. Okay, we know that DOGE is in charge of pointing out where cuts need to be made, and the administration wanted to avoid political retaliation claims, so they used reduction in force instead. Plus, due to the legal challenges right now with Schedule F, Schedule F has been put on hold. It has not been fully implemented until court proceedings can be processed. There are labor unions that have challenged Schedule F currently. There are legal cases running right now where they're trying to determine the legalities along if Schedule F could even be put in place. So I posted a TikTok last week when a federal judge ordered that 20,000 federal workers should be reinstated for being unjustly fired for performance issues their employee evaluations showed glowing reviews. Now, I posted this TikTok, as one does, who's building a podcast brand. And the major discourse and backlash that I have received has been a little bit alarming, actually, because I really thought in my little mind that people understood how the federal process worked and how the judicial system worked and if our judges had this legal right. And it has become very clear to me that people don't know about that. So as a sidebar, side note, I do want to say I'm going to be doing like a brief overhaul kind of bonus episode on the federal court system and kind of how they work. But for right now, here's what you need to know. There are hundreds of comments on my TikTok saying this judge needs to be impeached. This judge is overstepping. This judge is out of bounds. Yeah, but Clinton did the same thing and, you know, there were no complaints. And, you know, just on, so on and so forth. Basically, like, is this judge going to foot the bill for these federal employees? Don't you guys know that we need to get rid of them? And here's what I want to say. Okay, this is where it gets interesting. Because yes, federal judge William Alsop did rule that these mass terminations were illegal. Approximately almost 25,000, it's like 24,500 employees, federal employees, were affected. The layoffs were ruled to have violated established reduction in force procedures, including improper calculation of seniority and performance, political bias in termination decisions, and the judge also issued an injunction ordering the restatement of those employees. The administration has already announced its intention to appeal. It has appealed as of March 18th of when I'm recording this. But the legal question is, does a federal judge have the authority to overrule Office of Personnel Management or OPM? Yes, with a caveat. Okay. Federal judges have limited authority over internal OPM decisions, but they can intervene when federal employment laws are violated, so some type of Civil Service Reform Act, constitutional rights are implicated, so political discrimination under the First Amendment, or the Office of Personnel Management's actions are found to be arbitrary or capricious under the Administrative Procedures Act. What is the Administrative Procedures Act? I'm so glad you asked. I have 5 pages on it printed out, and I'm not going to read them all. But the APA, originally enacted in 1946, establishes procedures that federal agencies use for rulemaking and adjudications. The Act also set out procedures for how courts may review those agency actions. These judicial review procedures are default rules that apply unless another law supersedes them. To obtain a review under the APA, a person, and which is defined as an individual or a business or other organization seeking review must have suffered legal wrong or been otherwise harmed by agency action. The APA defines agency as each authority of government of the United States, minus several exceptions. Let's go into the scope of judicial review under the APA. The APA gives authority to federal courts to decide all relevant questions of law, interpret constitutional and statutory provisions, and determine the meaning of applicability of the terms and agency action. The APA gives that right to the judicial or the federal courts. By default, the U.S. district courts have jurisdictions to hear APA challenges, but Congress has vested review in other courts, such as federal courts of appeals, in specific circumstances. They have jurisdiction. The federal courts have jurisdiction in this. And let's go on to learn a little bit more, shall we? The AFGE is the one who originally filed to get all this to go down. The AFGE is a union. We'll get into them in a little bit. But back in 2018, executive orders conflicted with collective bargaining rights, so they were struck down. Okay, this is what the federal courts have already ruled on. The AFGE v. Trump in 2018, the United States versus NTU EU, which is another union, in 1995. Political discrimination in employment was ruled unconstitutional. So they've already ruled on that. Judge Alsup's DACA ruling in 2018, terminations of DACA was deemed unlawful under the APA. So yes, a federal judge absolutely has the authority to stop terminations if they violate established federal law or constitutional protections. And that, in his ruling, was what he said that they did. Now let's keep going down the rabbit hole so we can get even more complicated and possibly illegal. Under federal employment law, political bias in hiring and firing is explicitly prohibited. Prohibited personnel practices, or Title V. We saw in the APA, our federal has authority to rule under Title V. Because of that, there are prohibited personnel practices under Title V of the U.S. Code, Section 2302. Federal law protects federal employees from certain prohibited personnel practices, PPPs, including discrimination based on political affiliation, coercing an employee's political activity, granting or withholding employment benefits based on political loyalty, and retaliation for filing a complaint or acting as a whistleblower. If the Trump administration targeted specific employees based on their political beliefs or perceived loyalty rather than legitimate performance or budgetary reasons, that would constitute a clear violation of federal employment law. Now, we already know that this administration has tried to say that it's due to performance issues. And so that begs the question, do federal government employees have civil service protections? Yes, federal employees are subject to civil service protections, which require the government to provide more substantial justification and due process for disciplinary removals. Proof of cause for disciplinary mass removals are as followed. Performance-based termination. Employers must follow the federal performance improvement plan process, providing opportunities to improve. Now, we know that these were probationary employees, so hold that train of thought. Evidence includes poor performance reviews, failure to meet goals, and documented coachings or warnings. Other proof of cause, misconduct-based termination. So you can have performance-based or misconduct-based. Under misconduct-based, the employer must show that the employee engaged in specific misconduct, insubordination, theft, harassment. Evidence may include written complaints, investigation findings, and witness testimony. There are numerous procedural requirements for federal disciplinary terminations. They must be given notice and opportunity to respond. The federal employees can appeal to the Merit-Based Protection Board, the Merit System Protection Board, MSPB, if they believe that the removal was unjustified or violated procedural rights. If the case involved any type of discrimination or whistleblower retaliation, employees may also file with the EEOC or Office of Special Counsel. Now, let's jump back to, do our probationary employees have these same civil service protections? Most new federal employees serve on probation for either a year to 2 years, depending on the agency that they're working with. The probationary period is essentially a trial period, as is any other probationary period within any other public sector. The purpose of probationary period is to allow agencies to remove underperforming or unsuitable employees more easily. So now we're thinking, well, then he was well within his means, right? Send the thing out to Office of Personnel Management. Let these employees go. Agencies can terminate a probationary employee for unsatisfactory performance or misconduct with minimal procedural requirements, but written notice must still be provided. And these employees received zero notice, whereas we know that for private sector employees, they have to follow the WARN Act, which is 60 days notice. Reduction in force is not the same. It's at least 30 days notice. And these employees were provided 24 hours notice, if that. Also, if the termination is based on partisan political reasons or marital status, the employee has the right to appeal to the MSPB. So an example of a political bias or firing an employee for being partisan political reasons would be firing an employee for being affiliated with progressive political groups, replacing career servants with individuals loyal to the administration's political agenda, or retaliating against employees for speaking out against government policies. The unions that I've mentioned before have already filed complaints arguing that the terminations were politically motivated. And now if this is true, this can open up the door for affected employees to challenge their terminations under the Merit Systems Protection Board. So now we're talking class action, right? We're talking hundreds of thousands of employees who were let go. And when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of employees, it's more than just individual claims. However, a class action requires that a large group of similarly situated employees present their cases, evidence that the termination stemmed from a common unlawful practice, or in this case, political bias or improper reduction in force procedures, certification of the class by the MSPB. Here's where it gets even more into the rabbit hole. And when I tell you that this is exhausting, I understand that you're probably really tired of listening to like how deep this goes, but this is the unfortunate side of our government and our federal courts, is that it's not just black and white. There are a ton of gray areas when it comes to not only employment law, but just law in general and certain acts that certain agencies have to follow that other agencies do not necessarily have to follow. And that is why it is always good to document and have an employee or have an attorney on retainer, because God forbid something like this happens again, the Office of Personnel Management should have been contacting their attorney first. They should have been contacting and saying, okay, Trump is telling me to do XYZ. Does this follow? Can we do this? And none of that was done, unfortunately. Back to the issue at hand, though. The MSPB handles class actions by a couple of different ways. So you have to file your claim. The lead employee or the union would file the claim on behalf of the affected employees. The claim must identify the specific unlawful practice. So when they file the claim, they've got to write in their political discrimination procedure violation. The class would then be certified. The MSPB would review whether the claim meets the requirements. You've got to have numerosity, so a large enough group, commonality, same legal issue, typicality, lead plaintiff's claim represents the class, and adequacy, lead plaintiff can represent the class effectively. Then there's a hearing and decision. The MSPB would hold a hearing to determine if the terminations violated federal employment laws, and if successful, the board could order reinstatement, back pay, and damages. Now, we already know that Judge Alsop has ordered reinstatement. So where we're at in the process is kind of more looking like the MSPB is not touching it. But if it is overturned, it is very well possible that the MSPB could then pick it up. Where has this happened before? Hartman v. MSPB in 1992 established that MSPB has the authority to hear class action claims involving political bias and prohibited personnel practices. And NTEU versus Horner in 1987 allowed class action for improper reduction in force procedures when employees were terminated without proper notice. So I am betting dollars to donuts that this judge is going to cite NTEU versus Horner because they're already leaning on reduction in force procedures. If the unions can show that political bias influenced the terminations or that OPM failed to follow proper reduction in force, a class action could be one of the biggest employment cases in federal history. Let's talk union response, because the unions aren't taking this lying down. The American Federation of Government Employees, or the AFGE, and the National Treasurer Employees Union, the NTEU, have already filed lawsuits arguing that terminations were politically motivated. Congressional Democrats themselves have proposed legislation to block Schedule F altogether, and that we already know that has been going on because Alsop is coming out and saying this was improper reduction in force. Because we already have Democrats with proposed legislation to block Schedule F and other cases, we know that Schedule F isn't necessarily happening right now, but Republicans are still arguing that Schedule F is necessary to ensure government accountability. Public reaction has been swift, with concerns over the loss of institutional knowledge and politicization of federal agencies. We have seen mass TikToks already. We've seen mass coverage in the media already, and it's unfortunately just going to be one of those ongoing stories until appeals processes play out. There's no saying what's going to happen next. If the courts uphold the terminations, we could see a more politically influenced federal workforce or future presidents using reduction in force to target political opposition. We could see a potential weakening of the merit-based civil service system. And if you think back to it, we know that Trump wanted a merit-based system. The call is coming from inside of the House at this point because what do you mean that we can't have DEI, but you want a merit-based system, but you don't want these employees? And so it's looking a lot like you want a politically influenced federal workforce, and maybe that's just not going to happen. And if class action succeeds, it could lead to one of the largest reinstatements of federal employee history and potentially reshape how political influence impacts the federal workforce. Now, if courts do decide to strike down the terminations, employees will be reinstated. Schedule F could be ruled unlawful, and a major legal showdown over executive power and federal employment law could ensue. These are my thoughts for tonight, guys. This could reshape the entire future of federal employment. And, you know, we're just going to be watching this story closely. So stay tuned for updates. You can follow me on TikTok. If you liked this episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, share. I'm available wherever you subscribe to your podcast favorites. And I've recently joined Substack as well. So I'm over there to listen to. Email me your workplace drama or ask me any type of questions, hrafterdarkpro@gmail.com. And again, stay up to date with this story. Follow me over at TikTok at @hr_after_dark. Until next time, guys, this has been HR After Dark. Thanks for hanging out with me. Thanks for listening to this crazy muddled mess. And I wish I could make it a little bit simpler for you, but you know, go listen to the bonus episode. I should have that posted by, I would say, the weekend time. It's something that's going to be quick, snazzy, fast, and that should help you understand this episode if you give it a second listen through to kind of pick up on some key terms there. But that's it tonight. Thanks, guys.